Locked On Red Sox, your daily Boston Red Sox podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On Red Sox here on the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Gabrielle, founder of Girl at the Game. This is the home of your 14-9 Boston Red Sox, who are coming off of a series split with the Seattle Mariners. They had the day off on Monday, and they are about to go to New York for a two-game mini-series against the New York Mets, who they very rarely get to see. Before we get into the preview, today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. So for this episode, I am joined by Ryan Finkelstein, host of Locked On Mets. To preview the series, we talk about the Mets' start to the season, Francisco Lindor getting booed at Citi Field, what he thinks of the National League East, the division in which the Mets are currently in first place, and we talk about DeGrom, Sale, run support or lack thereof, all kinds of stuff. So without further ado, here is Ryan. All right. Well, this is like a treat, though. I don't know if you know this. The Mets are my National League team.
Okay.
Most of my family is from like Jersey and New York, and I was born in New York. So, it's the dirty little secret. I mean, I moved when I was one. It's
just not like I do these interviews. Like today, someone had me on. They're asking me like how the New York boroughs are mixed up, and I'm like, like with Mets and Yankees fans, I'm like, I actually live in South Florida. So I have no idea.
It's like Javi hosting Locked On Padres, and he's a Yankees fan from Jersey.
I didn't know that. I knew he was a Jersey. I didn't know he was a Yankees fan.
I think his dad is like a diehard Yankees fan, so he grew up in a Yankees house.
Okay.
But every once in a while, when we do a crossover, he will like high key just snark at me, and I'm like, "You don't get to do that. You host Locked On Padres, so like you're here as Locked On Padres host Javi Reyes." Anyway, this is a treat. We have Red Sox and Mets for a two-game series starting Tuesday. The Red Sox are going to have to face Jacob DeGrom. Am I right?
Yeah, he pitches on Wednesday.
I think they were really, really hoping that with the off day today, we're recording Monday night. I think the Red Sox lineup was really hoping that they would not have to face him, that they would give him an extra day off.
Yeah, well, the last time around, I think DeGrom got an extra day, and we saw how that worked out with him pitching that start on Friday night. But the Mets right now are kind of operating with a four-man rotation, so they're not skipping too many days for DeGrom. He's kind of pitching every fifth day, and I'm looking forward to watching him go against the Red Sox again.
So you guys are first in the NL East, and we're first in the AL East, and you have DeGrom, obviously. DeGrom being DeGoat, as they say, as the children say. I've seen a bunch of your games, but overall, how has your season been going so far?
It's been the weirdest start to a year outside of, you know, like last season, which was just everything's weird about it. But for a normal 162 game season, it's been so random. The first, we were all hyped up about opening day. Lindor signs right before that. And then the Nationals have a COVID outbreak, and we all just had to wait for 3 days for the season to start. And then they've been rained out. They were snowed out. Like, it's just been a really weird year with the schedule. So it's been hard for the team to get into like any real rhythm. But because the NL East is so bunched up right now, they're in first place technically. And the pitching has been great. It's been the offense that has been struggling a lot.
So I just have to put this out there for our listeners right now, as it stands, your Mets are in first place, but the Phillies, who are in second place, actually have one more win than the Mets. Yeah. So you're 9-8 and the Phillies are 10-11 and your division's like really tight. I mean, the Braves and Marlins, they're 9-12 each. And then the Nationals are 8-11. So I think this is like not this. I don't know about last year, because last year just feels like a giant, awful blur, but I feel like the last couple years, generally your division's been somewhat tight.
It's one of those divisions where every year coming in, everyone says the NL East is so stacked. All these teams are great. And then most of them are 500. So we were doing this. We have a little NL East group chat with our, and we're like, what is going on this year? These teams just don't look as good as everyone was kind of hyped up to be. But with the Mets, I think eventually they have the potential to really pull away. Right now, they're just kind of like winning percentage first place because of not playing as many games. But eventually, hopefully, they'll kind of separate themselves. The Braves have been surprising to me, honestly. Like, I don't know what's going on there. It's kind of like the Yankees in the AL East.
Hey, I'm not complaining about that because we
Yeah, I'm
are
not either.
right. You can't. I mean, I remember my friend Shannon, who goes by Miss Met on Twitter. She had a
Okay.
great tweet a couple years ago. I think it might have actually been 2018 during the September Red Sox Mets series. Red Sox and Mets fans at Fenway Park chanting "Yankees suck" together, and I was like, "Yes, nothing unites like hating on the Yankees. I mean, it's perfect." And so the
Yeah.
Yankees are 9-12 and the Red Sox are 14-9. And I'm really hoping I'm not jinxing anything here, but it feels pretty good. It feels really good because the Yankees are just every year MLB is like, this is the Yankees year. And the Yankees are like, no. And it's, I love it. I love it. I love it for us. I love it for them. I love it for their fans who write 27 rings in their bio, not realizing it's actually 26 rings and a pocket watch. I love it.
Yeah, I do have to mention when you brought up Yankees suck, I have a Yankees suck shirt and it's like my default. If the Mets aren't playing and I'm at a game anywhere, even if it's not even baseball, I just wear the Yankees suck shirt. And that shirt is universal. I've had people in Kansas City, in Houston, everywhere. Everyone is united that the Yankees suck.
It's funny that you say that because there was a, I think it was a Sports Illustrated writer after The Last Dance came out. And everyone was talking about like, okay, so what's the next docuseries going to be? Because we all had nothing else going on in April and May of 2020. So we were all just craving another thing that we could all watch and live tweet. And somebody wrote an article about how the next docuseries of that style should be about the Yankees core four. And I was like, you don't seem to understand that Michael Jordan was almost universally not beloved, but like admired, obsessed over, anointed the king of basketball in his era. And the Yankees, for the most part, are universally disliked. So I'm not really sure if the appeal is there. Like most people will not watch that. I
Yeah,
thought it was like the funniest thing.
well, Jordan too. Like Jordan has like widespread appeal. Like no one, if Jorge Posada goes to China, no one's gonna know who he is. Like, I'm sorry, it's just, I don't think anyone's gonna care either to watch a documentary about Jorge Posada. Like, if anything, it would just be a Derek Jeter, long documentary, and then the core four would be mentioned. But I don't
Yeah.
think that that's worth a whole Last Dance.
I mean, I think like maybe a Mariano Rivera, like
Yeah.
2 hour documentary, maybe, or like some kind of 3 part hour, 3 hours divided up into, three pieces kind of thing. That would be cool. But anyway, the reason that I thought of the Yankees, aside from the fact that they're in last place in the division, and I'm going to say that as many times as I possibly can while it's still true, is because Yankees fans have this habit of booing their own players. And I heard that Mets fans have booed Francisco Lindor. Is this
Yeah.
true? Is this a thing?
Yeah, I mean
The same Francisco Lindor that everyone was obsessing over on Twitter and begging Steve Cohen to extend for the entire rest of humanity
Yeah,
is getting
fans can get
booed.
emotional. I mean, Michael Conforto's been getting a lot of boos this year, and Conforto has been a homegrown player that was part of a World Series team that's done a lot and is having a rough start to the season playing in sub-freezing temperature. You'd think you'd give him a little bit of time, but Mets fans can get a little emotional at times, as any fan base, but maybe a little bit more so. And so, yeah, you boo Lindor, even though he's the guy that everyone was clamoring for months and months throughout the offseason. But
I mean, I feel like Lindor, I'm really not that concerned.
no.
I mean, you guys had a weird start to the season, like you said. And, honestly, I heard some Red Sox fans, and I put quotation marks there. I heard some Red Sox fans booing at Fenway Park earlier in the season. Like, I think over the first weekend when they were getting swept 0-3 by the Orioles on their opening series. And I have to say, like, that's never going to be me, but I'm sure you can relate to this, having finally gotten out of the the hold of the Wilpons, and you know, being the Mets, the Red Sox in 2020 after losing Mookie and the Cora situation and everything. I don't personally agree with booing, but I understand why people would want to boo, because there are very few ways that they can get their frustrations out. If you come at a team's social media, the owners aren't going to see it, because they, contrary to what people seem to believe, Steve Cohen doesn't run the Mets Twitter. John Henry doesn't run the Red Sox Twitter. And people will be like, getting rid of Mookie was the biggest mistake, as if like the social team at the Red Sox had anything to do with that.
Like that's going to fix it and bring right. it back.
Like you change, like I said today with the Phillies, you know, the Phillies selected the contract of Odubel Herrera and he's a domestic abuser. And I was like, just a reminder, guys, the Phillies social team has nothing to do with deciding whether or not this guy gets his contract selected, you know, but if you're booing at the ballpark, the chances are that the GM is going to hear, or, you know, even the owners in their box. And yeah, it might not do anything, maybe, but in a weird, twisted way, it does technically make more sense than like losing your mind on Twitter, because you're actually in the vicinity. Like you're technically literally in shouting distance of the people who actually made the decision that you're unhappy with. But at the same time, like I just, it's not my thing.
No, not mine either. I think the last thing that I've ever done like that in 2015, I was at a Mets Marlins game the day that Scott Boras came out and said they were going to shut down Matt Harvey. And I'm not proud to admit that I called Matt Harvey's name. He turned and looked at me and I flipped him off.
Oh no. Yeah. Ryan.
I know.
I'm How close were you?
It was like in batting practice. So I was, like, okay. He definitely saw me, but I was 19. I was emotional. I'm sorry. And, you know, then Harvey pitched anyway and probably ruined his career because of it. So I've felt bad ever since. And I will never boo a player like that. I will just maybe rip a player on a podcast using actual stats and facts.
Yeah. Which for people who actually understand your stats is a lot more effective, because you're actually making a cogent argument. I will say though, I think it was 2019. I was having a really bad night and I said, I wish the entire Red Sox bullpen would get eaten by bears, which like, obviously I didn't mean in like a literal sense. And for like a year now, people have dragged me for it as if like, that's the worst thing that's ever been said on Twitter. And like, as if I actually meant it, but I do have to say, taking my dad to Red Sox games pre-COVID, our seats are pretty close to the Red Sox dugout and thereby pretty close to the field. And there was a game in 2018 and a Red Sox pitcher who's no longer on the team, or who I'd written about, and so they followed me on social, was having a terrible outing. And my dad was screaming. My dad, who's like a 60-plus-year-old rabbi who probably couldn't strike out Pablo Sandoval, no offense, dad, starts screaming, throw strikes, like really loudly. And after the game, I like asked the guy, I was like, hey, did you happen to hear in the eighth inning someone's shouting like at you? And he's like, yeah, someone screamed throw strikes like 10 times. I was like, yeah, sorry, that was my dad. I felt really bad.
Well, at least he was like trying to help him out. I mean, it's constructive criticism.
I know, right?
He's just saying, hey, just throw some strikes.
Yeah, but I feel like it would be more meaningful if it was coming from a guy who could actually throw strikes. Like, you know, I don't know if you ever saw that moment from the 2018 World Series. Chris Sale was really mad in the dugout and he was screaming at his teammates. I use this GIF a lot. He's like losing his mind in the Red Sox dugout. And I'm like, well, coming from him, it makes sense. Because he's Chris Sale. You know, if he's telling you to pitch better, like he actually can pitch better than you. So, it makes a little sense, but my relationship with baseball got a lot healthier when I realized that these people are basically going out there and having a job performance every single day, like a performance review. And like, how would I feel if millions of people all over the world were picking me apart on social media at my job every single day? And don't get me wrong, I already get picked apart plenty on social media. So I couldn't do it. And ever since then, I've been a lot nicer about the things that I say, ergo no more bear eating tweets for me. Yeah. But let's talk about this series, because I don't know if they're putting these on your broadcast, but every single day on NESN this week for the Red Sox broadcasts, there have been like 50 commercials about Lindor and Bogarts and like the shortstops, like the best shortstops in the East facing off against each other. How has Francisco Lindor been doing?
So Lindor, it's funny too, because the Nationals, their social team before the last series tweeted out the best shortstop in baseball in our lineup today. So I feel like we're going to get a lot of that this year with Lindor, just matching up to shortstops. And so far, he's not doing the best offensively. He has one home run so far, I think only one double. So he's not hitting for a lot of power, but he is such a leader. I don't think the Mets have had a player like that in some time. Obviously, you'll probably remember, you know, with Betts, that type of presence where even when they aren't going right, you just kind of feel like they're helping the team just by being out there. So that's what I've seen from Lindor. And then he's just an unbelievable defensive shortstop. So that's just been fun to watch. I don't think I've seen that since Ray Ordonez, and I was like seven. So in a Mets uniform to see a guy turn any double play, make any play in the hole, that's just been awesome to watch.
I think it's going to be a really cool matchup too. Obviously, Xander Bogaerts has been having an incredible start to the season. He's like top 10 in batting average. He homered three times in his last four games, I think it is now, including back-to-back games. This episode is brought to you by 1010, a capsule collection of diamond rings that are responsibly sourced, limited edition designs at fair price points. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 creative styles of diamond rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today, rings sure to bring joy into her life. Using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 female design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful ring. Ideal for engagement, Mother's Day, or simply a beautiful conversation piece, they're the perfect way to bring light into her life. They're available now through Mother's Day only on BlueNile.com. Just search the words 10 by 10. This collection features high-quality, fine jewelry that will surprise and delight and fairly priced, so you can give her something special and truly meaningful. If you're on the hunt for the perfect, unique ring she'll treasure forever, you're definitely going to want to check this out. They won't be around for long, so find them now by searching the words 10x10 only at BlueNile.com. You might want to start betting on the Red Sox, and BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. This week has tons of sports action on the go as the NFL draft is on, and the Kentucky Derby is back as the first leg of the Triple Crown begins this weekend. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all your UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. This year, the Locked On Podcast Network is partnering with the Draft Network to cover the NFL Draft live. Get insight and analysis from Locked On local experts and the Draft Network's national experts. Subscribe to the Locked On NFL YouTube page to watch live three-day coverage of the NFL Draft April 29th to May 1st. I think it's going to be a cool matchup. I mean, we've got two first-place teams. I don't think either of us saw that coming this early in the season. I thought maybe your team, honestly, but I honestly did not think it would be my team.
Well, that's what I want to ask you, because when I look at the Red Sox,
I have no answers, Ryan. I have no answers.
You can't explain it. I'm just wondering where they're getting the pitching from. I mean, I haven't been paying attention to the scores, but I just, outside of Chris Sale, I don't know like any other pitcher I would say the Red Sox have that I would necessarily want. So to see them in first place, I'm like, how are they doing this?
I think he and Syndergaard actually had surgeries like the same week or something. They had it like right after everything's shut down with COVID. And the pitching has been a huge surprise. Though I will say the pitching was doing really well for like that whole 9-game win streak and a little bit extending after that. The pitching, our starting rotation, every pitcher for like a 10 or so game span went at least five innings. There were very few walks, and it was just generally like kind of mind blowing, if we're being honest, because no one expected this. I did not expect this. My expectation going into this season was our pitching will be slightly better than last year because we have actual starting pitchers, which last year, half of our pitching rotation was from AAA. And, you know, we had the quantity, we didn't have the quality from the outset. I mean, like Garrett Richards, $10 million, 1 year deal. That was kind of like a really Matt Andrees. He can start, but he's currently like in our bullpen. Honestly, I don't really know. I thought this was going to be another one of those years where the offense was going to have to just like outslug the other team again, because that was pretty much the only way they won games in 2019. But there have been games where it's been like just a dazzling pitching performance. And I don't really have any words for that because I have no idea how they're doing it. But then after the 9-game win streak was over, they've kind of struggled in their last like 6+ games. They split the series with the Blue Jays. I think they split the series with the White Sox. They split the series with the Mariners. Their pitching has been faltering, and that truly is their deciding factor, because for almost every one of their last 10 games, I think the starter has given up at least one run in the first inning. They're not lasting as long into the games. Even Eduardo Rodriguez, who pitched like an absolute gem yesterday, he still gave up 3 runs and he struggled. I mean, he didn't struggle as much as the Mariners starter, who the Red Sox knocked out of the game after a third of an inning when he walked in like 3 runs and the bases were still loaded when he left. But they're kind of floundering, I think. I'm not really sure what the problem is, but, you know, JD cooled off a little bit, then he kind of heated up again. I don't know. I mean, anyone who thought that 9-game win streak was going to be like their whole season, I mean, they were not going to go 159-3. Like, that wasn't going to happen. But I'm very interested to see how this series goes, just because our teams don't really get to play each other very often. And it's DeGrom. Can we please talk about DeGrom and run support and his 15 strikeout game? Because I honestly thought he already had a 15 strikeout game in his career.
He's had like 3 or 4 14 strikeout games. So this was, I think this was his third this year of 14 or more. Don't quote me on that. I'm not positive, but yeah, that start was just insane. To strike out 15, not walk anyone, only gave up 2 hits. I think he retired the last 19 batters he faced. And yes, the run support thing, my pinned tweet is something along the lines of, does 300 no decisions get you into the Hall of Fame, asking for a friend, with a gif of Jacob DeGrom, because that's just been his career. And the fact that the Mets are batting him eighth now, and he comes up in that spot in the, I think it was the sixth inning, first and second, no score. He's not bunting, and he hits a double to put the first run on the board. I think this year he has 2 RBIs, 2 runs scored, and 1 earned run allowed. So that kind of tells you Jacob DeGrom in a nutshell right there.
So I think it's actually really interesting. We talked about this a little bit before we actually hit record. In that way, Chris Sale and Jacob DeGrom have a lot in common, because Chris Sale is basically our version of Jacob DeGrom, both in terms of when he's healthy, he's our ace. He gets no run support and he has really high strikeout totals. I mean, the reason I was so surprised that DeGrom hadn't had 15 yet was because Chris Sale 2 years ago, almost, let's see. Yeah.
Did he almost get the record, the 20?
He got 17 strikeouts on May 14th against the Rockies. He also did not walk a single batter. That was the most strikeouts since, I don't remember if it was Kluber or Scherzer, whoever had a 20 strikeout game in 2016. So Sale was the most strikeouts since then. And it was really cool because I think it had been Pedro also who'd had a 17 strikeout game where he also didn't walk a single batter, but don't quote me on that, because that might not be exactly right. But they lost that game because Chris Sale also never gets any run support. In 2019, Eduardo Rodriguez led starters like run support average. He had the most of any pitcher in all of Major League Baseball. And Chris Sale was like somewhere at the bottom of the barrel. Even Rick Porcello, who was like the worst pitcher in baseball in 2019, had like 6-something runs of run support average in his starts. And Chris Sale, like literally every single game, he had like a game, I think it was 2017 or 2018 against the White Sox. They lost 1-0, even though he struck out like 10 batters. And I was like, are you kidding me? You couldn't score one run for this man. So I feel you. It's wild to me. Like, you can bring out the worst pitcher, and maybe it's some weird mental thing with the batters that they think because the pitcher's really good, that they don't have to score runs. And like, for a guy who struggles, they need to put up those runs because like they need to outscore all of the runs that he's giving up. But like, Pedro has this famous quote from the 2004 ALCS. He says, all I can do is go out there and pitch. I can't do anything if they don't score a run. DeGrom's keeping your opponent off the board. I mean, I guess in the National League, technically he can put you guys on the board, but in the American League, all your pitcher is trying to do is hold down the fort, but the only one who can build anything is you. And it just, whenever I see DeGrom like lose another game or get a no decision, I'm like, dude, I feel you. Like, he and Chris Sale should have some kind of support group at this point.
It might. I have a couple of theories on it. For one, anytime that happens, I just get hit with all the stats, you know, DeGrom's record and the team's record and how ridiculous it is, which is really frustrating. I do think that there might be something to when you have a strikeout pitcher like DeGrom or Sale. I think it kind of turns your teammates into, you know, they're kind of just watching the game. I mean, they go out to their position, they watch DeGrom strike out the side, they go back in, and maybe you aren't as engaged. Whereas with Marcus Stroman, I've been saying he's going to lead the team in wins because he just goes out, throws his sinker, gets a bunch of ground balls. Everyone's involved throughout the game. And maybe that just, I don't know, brings more energy to the team. And so maybe that carries over offensively. So that's kind of the way I've tried to rationalize it. But otherwise, it's just horrible luck for DeGrom because he should be winning 25 games a year if his team was even putting up 3 runs for him every start, because that's how good he's been.
Yeah, I think one of our MLB hosts asked this question recently, and they said, like, what's a bigger travesty? The fact that the Angels, something like that the Angels haven't built a team around Mike Trout, or that Jacob DeGrom never gets any run support. And I was like, I truly don't. That's an unanswerable question, because both of them are absolutely shameful for the game of baseball. I mean, but I was going to ask you about Marcus Stroman, because I know he opted out last year from the season, and so Mets fans were really bummed because he's a great pitcher, and I think he's an amazing representative for the game. He's like, I love his tweets. What has it been like actually having him on the team this year and on the mound?
For one, when he opted out, I mean, personally, I completely accepted his decision. I didn't think anything of it. I was like, look, the guy's not 100% healthy. It's kind of a sham of a season. He's entering free agency. Why is he going to risk his health and potentially millions of dollars to go and pitch for the Mets? And now when he's back accepting the qualifying offer, you see how much he was missed last year because his personality is infectious. I think he really is one of those guys that uplifts everyone around him. And he's definitely one of the more popular players on the team. And I mean, Saturday, the Mets won each of his first 3 starts. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I think, you know, they really do play well when he's on the mound. And it's really exciting now that the fans can maybe come full circle a bit, because when he's on that mound in Citi Field, the building does get pretty electric. Just the way that he celebrates his teammates when they're making a big play behind him, the way he gets fired up when he strikes somebody out. He's just a fun guy to watch.
Yeah, I think he makes a huge difference for your team. Built Bar makes protein bars that taste like candy bars. I guarantee you these are the best tasting protein bars ever. Unlike most protein bars, these are soft, easy to chew, low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. Each bar is covered in 100% chocolate, but they're still great for the health conscious guy or gal. The dirty little secret with protein bars is that most of them are filled with hidden sugars and preservatives, but Built Bar isn't like that. They're low sugar, high in protein and fiber. For a limited time only, go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. The Ultimate Mock Draft 2021, presented by Locked On and Odyssey, is happening now. Featuring analysis from NFL experts and our local experts for every team making trades and picking the next stars of their team. Search the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 on the new Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Odyssey is your audio home for all the sports, podcasts, music, and news that matter to you. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. I'm curious, first, how do you think our series is going to shake out? And I know it's April 26th, but after this first, for you guys, 20 games, have your predictions changed for your season? And what are your predictions now? Like, where are you guys on October 1st?
Well, I would say, to answer that question first, I think that coming into this year, there was so much hype, but I just couldn't quite buy into it. And now, even though the Mets haven't played well, the fact that they've kind of been playing maybe a C version of what they can do and they're still in first place, my expectations have kind of been raised. I think that they're going to be even better than I thought. I really think after kind of watching things play out, I think they're the best team in this division on paper. The bullpen's been way better than I thought. The rotation is going to get better when Carrasco and Syndergaard come back. So, yeah, I think that this is a team that can compete with the Dodgers and the Padres down the stretch. But as a longstanding Mets fan, there's still that part of my brain that can't completely believe that we have a great team until I see it happen. So we'll see. And then as far as this series, I feel like it's one of those series where the Mets just are going to get I think it's going to be split. I don't think that the Mets are going to sweep it. I think that one of these games, the Red Sox are going to go off and probably not the one with DeGrom on the mound.
Well, it's honestly funny that you say that, because the first game of the series, arguably, and by arguably, I mean, it's not even a question, the Red Sox are putting their worst pitcher on the mound in Garrett Richards. His ERA is over 6.
That's a good thing for you. That's a good thing. Because the Mets don't hit good. They're like opposite. You know, if they're facing a really good pitcher.
Oh, like, so you're only going to knock Eduardo Rodriguez, too, but you're not going to knock Garrett Richards?
No, what I'm saying is that if Joe Ross blanked us for like 7 innings the other day, and Joe Ross had like a 6.55 ERA. So you're saying
Garrett Richards is going to throw a perfect game tomorrow, basically.
I'm not saying that, but when I do these, like the previews of series, I go, oh, that guy's got a 10.55 ERA. Watch out for him to throw a gem against the Mets, because that's just how these things work.
So, by the way, Matt Harvey and the Orioles just beat the Yankees. How funny is that?
I did see that Harvey was pitching a gem against the Yankees. I enjoyed that.
He pitched pretty well against the Red Sox. I don't know if it was the first weekend or if it was the other time that we faced them in Baltimore, but I'm not saying like he's anywhere close to being like comeback player of the year or anything, but he did look good when the Red Sox had to face him, to the point where I was like, I didn't know this guy actually still had an arm. So does he still have an arm, or is my team just really lame? He looked pretty solid. I think, you know, I'm worried because I think you guys are going to knock Garrett Richards around like everybody else does. And that's the first game of the series. And the second game of the series is DeGrom. So it's DeGrom. That's like all you have to say. And so between that, I'm like kind of worried that you guys are going to sweep us.
I sure hope so.
I hope not. We're trying to hold on to first place just like for a little longer. But yeah, I agree with what you said, because I feel the same way. You know, my expectations going into this season, well, I mean, I guess the difference is that expectations in Mets fandom were probably a lot higher than in Red Sox fandom going into the season, because like you got Lindor, and like that's like a reverse of Mookie Betts. You know, you actually got the guy. Your owner wants to spend money. He actually cares what your fans think. But I was trying to stay positive going into the season. I was like, I think they're going to be fun. I'm not saying they're going to like be in first place. I think my prediction was they're going to like be a wild card team. And after they went on a 9-game winning streak, I was like, yeah, my expectations are up. Like, of course they're up, because like you raised them, you know, like when they were bad in 2019, I was like, you realize you're the same team that won 108 games last year in a World Series. So of course I'm holding you to a high standard, because you literally set that standard when you won a franchise record 108 games in a World Series. Like, that's kind of how it works. Like, these expectations don't come out of nowhere. Like, either my expectations are terrible because you're terrible, or my expectations are high because you gave me a reason to think that there's something worthwhile here. So now I'm now that they've been kind of scuffling, I'm like, I literally know that you can play better than this because you won 9 games in a row like a week ago.
I think the Red Sox are so weird, that
Oh, they're
first to
very
worst,
weird. They're
first to
very
worst.
weird.
I don't know how, it doesn't seem like, but they've won the championship, so you can't be mad as a fan, right? Like, the Yankees are this team that's always atop the division, but they've only won once since 2009. So I think, as a Red Sox fan, I'm sure at least you have all the World Series rings, but it is weird that you'll win a World Series and then fall to last. That just doesn't happen often.
Yeah, well, I think that's a main reason Chaim Bloom is here. I mean, the biggest thing he's said when he does like Zooms and stuff is he's here to cultivate consistency. And that's like a huge part of him building up the farm system. And I feel like Mookie Betts would have been pretty consistent, but that's fine. But, that's been a huge thing with the Red Sox over the last 20 years. I looked into this when the Kim Ng hiring happened for the Marlins, and she started interviewing in 2005. Between 2005 and now, the Red Sox have had something like five general managers and multiple stints of interim managers. And since Grady Little, they've had like Grady Little, Terry Francona. I mean, Tito was there for a while, but Little, Francona, Bobby Valentine, John Farrell, Cora, Renicky, Cora. And yeah, look, I wouldn't trade the championships for anything in the world. I mean, the championships were amazing. Every single one of them, holds a special place in my heart. But at the same time, and I'm not saying this to sound ungrateful because I know, I mean, like you've never seen a Mets championship before. Like it's not about, I appreciate how spoiled Red Sox fans have become. I do. I get it. I totally get it. There's like no good way to say it, so I'm just going to say it. That doesn't change the fact that like when your team is absolutely garbage and has like shipped off all your favorite players and your manager is embroiled in a cheating, not one, but two cheating scandals, like as a fan who has no control over these situations and like you were born into baseball fandom. I was born into baseball fandom. Like, I can't just stop being a Red Sox fan. Like, I'm physically incapable. I'm literally Al Pacino in The Godfather. Just when I think I'm out, they pull me back in. Like, I can't. Like, my team got rid of Mookie Betts, and I'm still here hosting a Red Sox podcast. Like, it's an addiction. And, like, I've been compared to Jimmy Fallon's character in Fever Pitch, but, like, able to hold a relationship, but, like, Jimmy Fallon. Sully said something perfect that I have been repeating ever since to people. He said, "Your team doesn't owe you a championship. Your team owes you a summer. It owes you the chance to go to a ballpark and not know from the outset that your team's going to lose every game. You go to the ballpark excited to see what's going to happen because you don't assume your team's going to suck. Your team owes you the possibility of wins and happiness and adventure and like miracles and amazing moments. And if you know your team is terrible, there's none of that. And it sucks because it also drives away the potential for like, new fans." And I'm not, again, I understand how fortunate Red Sox fans and Boston fans in general have been over the last 20 years. It's not that. It's that it is bad for my health, like literally bad for my health. When my team goes from 108 wins to literally embarrassing themselves for 2 solid years and losing their entire pitching rotation, like, I don't know as I age how I can physically, like, I probably have the blood pressure of an 80-year-old man who's eaten cheeseburgers every day of his life because this team is trying to kill me. And that's why Chaim Bloom is here. And as much as I disagree with a lot of the decisions he's made, if he can get it to a point where my team is moderately good and enjoyable to watch on an almost yearly basis. I'm not even talking about championships. Like, I've seen four. I'm fine. I don't need another one. I just mean, like, I like to go to the ballpark and not be like, well, I'm here to watch my team lose again. And in 2019, that's literally what I did every single day. Every day. Sorry, that was really long.
No, it's all good. I would say that's why I've been jealous. I wasn't jealous of the Dodgers for winning the World Series. I've been jealous of Dodgers fans because they've been awesome for like 10 years, winning first place every single year. So you know that they're gonna go out and win 95 games at least,
Right.
and you're gonna enjoy your summer, as Sully would say.
I mean, I used to go to Dodgers games like a lot when I lived in LA. I saw Ryu when he was still with the Dodgers. He pitched a complete game shutout on like 95 pitches. He had like a Maddux game, and Justin Turner hit three home runs. And I was like, this is awesome. And it's also really fun when it's not your favorite team. I don't know if you ever go to games that are not the Mets, but I find it really refreshing. Because I'm really not invested. So I can actually just like enjoy the baseball. Because with the Red Sox, I'm like so, I was like physically ill towards the end of that 9-game win streak, especially on the doubleheader day when they ended up pulling off like a win in both games. Because I was so invested. Like I was dying on every single pitch. Like I could barely breathe. I was like, I can't look. I was freaking out. But when I would go to Dodgers games, like I had a great time because I don't care if they lose. I don't care if they win. I really don't care at all. I'm just here to watch some good baseball, and they are good baseball. It's very refreshing to watch baseball that's not your baseball, you know?
Yeah, you don't have to live and die with each pitch, and you can just kind of
Exactly. Especially if it's
boop.
Sale and DeGrom and they don't get any run support.
Exactly.
Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. As a reminder, check out Locked On Red Sox on Instagram at Locked On Red Sox, all one word, lowercase. We're at LO underscore Red Sox on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at GFSTARR1. Don't forget to follow on Apple or Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, so you never miss an episode. And check in with me on Twitter today as I live tweet this Red Sox game and every Red Sox game. Thanks so much for tuning in. Have a wonderful rest of your day. And as always, go Red Sox.
Thank you.